This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made.
Okay, everyone, welcome to the People Speak Radio here on BBS Radio. We've got an important guest tonight, again, 9/11 related, which is very appropriate, of course, because we're coming to the 7th anniversary in a few more weeks of the 9/11 attacks. So we want to be focusing attention on this, because regardless what side of the fence you fall in the 9/11 debate, nobody can argue the fact that the real perpetrators of this crime still walk the streets, don't they? Whether you believe that bin Laden did it or the government was involved, doesn't matter. There has not been justice served. This is the biggest crime scene in American history, and it still remains entirely unresolved. Even the heads of the 9/11 Commission, Zellico, Keene, Hamilton, have admitted that they were lied to across the board by the Pentagon, by NORAD, and several other government officials. So we can't accept the 9/11 Commission as the final answer, or any answer for that matter, regarding what happened that day. So it's great that we're having guests like this on to help discuss some of these matters and, you know, bring them to the forefront. So with no further ado, let me welcome, I actually had him on a couple weeks ago when I interviewed, or last week I think it was, interviewed the Arizona State Senator. And this man had called in, but now today we're focusing on him entirely as our guest, Mr. Blair Gadsby. Welcome to the show, Blair.
Hey, thank you. It's good to be with you, Gerald.
Yeah, for those that didn't tune in when we had you on last week, just give us a little background about yourself. You're a professor of religious studies.
That's correct. I teach religious studies here in Phoenix, Greater Phoenix, Arizona area, in the community college system. I teach world religions, introduction to Islam, and religion in the modern world. So from the get-go, I know that the explanations as to why we were attacked were suspicious, just from a religion understanding point of view. But yes, that's what I do, gearing up for this coming semester. So I'm associated with Karen Johnson, and then being our senator and speaking out on 9/11 truth issues. She came to the early support of the hunger strike that I performed a little earlier in the spring, early summer, in front of John McCain's office. That's really what kind of kept go ahead.
Yeah, just so that people know how you got to become a big name in the 9/11 Truth Movement. You had become so distraught over so many of the problems and inconsistencies with the official 9/11 story and the obfuscations and obvious cover-up activities that were going on that you actually went on a hunger strike. Why don't you tell us about that?
Exactly. It really, frustration is the best way to put it. Frustration with our politicians. I mean, you've just gone through the litany of the various individual characters who have already expressed their doubts about just the sincerity and the veracity of the 9/11 Commission investigation. The media, clearly the media is complicit here in this cover-up. The overwhelming silence around the important issues, really connecting the dots like good investigative journalism is supposed to do. And then finally, frustration with the public. It was after a year of being in the 9/11 Truth Movement and living in Phoenix, where in the greater area here, we've got close to 4 million people. Our 9/11 Truth Group is very, very small. And it's very sad and discouraging, on the one hand, to think that such a large metropolitan area with such a potent political topic has such a small numbers. To raise awareness and, of course, to zero in on Mr. McCain, and naturally being he's our Arizona senator, so he's a local figure. And then, of course, with him campaigning for the presidency, that gave the story a potential national audience. But the media did its job and seemed to it that it really never bubbled up to rise to the occasion of being a national story. But it was a 7-day hunger strike from May 26th. Memorial Day of this year through to June 11th, which was a full 17 days, the 11th of the month being kind of a symbolic ending. 11th of the month is a day of protest with the 9/11 Truth Movement, so we ended it on that day. And I had lost about a sixth of my body weight, so I couldn't go too much longer. And we had, in fact, received an answer from McCain. So we did achieve our objective of getting an answer from him. Sadly, the answer was no. He was not going to meet and discuss these topics with the scientists. But we did reach him. And that was one of the successes of the hunger strike, too.
Right. At least you got his attention. I'm not surprised at his response, or lack thereof.
Well, think about really what I was asking. I was asking for him to sit down with Gage and Jones and Griffin, who all three gentlemen said they would respond and come to Phoenix immediately if McCain agreed, and to bring his scientists. And then I asked for national coverage. I wanted this to be broadcast nationally. Well, I mean, if what we suspect is true, there was no way they could grant that. So it was almost asking the impossible, but I said, to heck with it. You don't shoot for the stars. You don't hit the moon. We've got to at least approach our public officials with this information, this very indisputable information, and seek a response from them. I think that was the importance of the effort, was that it was an attempt to reach one of the highest leaders in our land, a public official, very humbly and very nonviolently. And there are a couple other reasons I can go into, too, Charles, as to why I felt this nonviolent effort wasn't so important. But it's to reach out to our leaders and say, now, look, we are aware of this information. We want to make you aware of this information. What is your response to it? And just sit back and see how they respond.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, this is something that concerns all Americans. You know, this isn't something we can afford to ignore. I mean, this is 3,000 of our fellow citizens. We could have very easily been among them, or some of our loved ones, some of our family members. You know, how can this not be something that people are concerned about? It's amazing, the apathy.
That is frightful. It's really frightful because, I mean, I can understand those who have some inside knowledge being on the QD about it and not wanting to go along. I can even understand and comprehend the media's complicity here, being the corporate network of, you know, the complex, all the rest of it. But from the people's point of view, good grief, when exposed to this information, you would want to think, you would hope the response would be, you'd want to get to the bottom of it. It's not just a matter of the historical record. We continue to fight wars on the basis of the 9/11 story, the 9/11 myth. So the apathy is very hard to understand. Very hard to understand.
Very frustrating. But I you know, I have to commend you for what you're doing. So many people have said, "Oh, I'm just one person. What difference can I make?" Well, here we have one person here, folks, who did make a difference. And you know, you might argue, well, it's not changing things. Well, no, it is. It's brought a lot of awareness. It got the attention of McCain. He couldn't avoid it.
Right. And we have it on record. We have it on record. If he should become president, we know that he knows. You know,
right.
We have the letter from him. We know that he is aware of what goes on, has gone on, what the claims are about the 9/11 truth. He ultimately said that he was satisfied with the goodwill and the good intentions of the commission report, so he was just going to let it go at that. But
and yet the commission heads themselves aren't.
Precisely. Perhaps I should have reminded him of that.
Hey, well, at least you didn't get, "How dare you," like Bill Clinton.
Right, yeah. He did
when he was confronted with
An Ohio Change person asked McCain about the hunger strike sometime after it was over. But McCain was out at Xavier University in Ohio, and an Ohio Change person asked him about the hunger strike. And McCain said something to the effect that, well, he didn't appreciate being threatened. And I thought that was a very peculiar response.
Threatened? Oh, gee, are they going to label you a terrorist now?
It was kind of silly. The only thing really threatened is something that is very weak and flimsy. And I would imagine it would be an untruth or a lie that would be threatened by. I mean, if it was truly open and honest, look what they did with TWA 800, right? I mean, they dragged that damn thing up from the bottom of the ocean piece by piece and
put it
together, trying to get to the bottom of just what happened. And even if you do or do not agree with the conclusions, it's another matter. It did appear as though they were trying to get to the bottom of it, but the exact opposite happened here.
Well, I mean, after Kennedy's assassination, the very next day they had the Warren Commission, albeit a cover-up commission itself, too, but at least the very next day that was assembled, you know. the shuttle crash in 2003, they had a commission established the very next day. 9/11 comes along, and 14 months go by. This is the single biggest crime scene in American history.
Unbelievable. The cover-up is very comprehensive, and that was where the frustration was coming from. There is a cover-up, so, okay, they didn't let, when I say they, the media conglomerate, they didn't let the story become a national story, the hunger strike, I mean. But, you know, we were able to break into the local press. We got some negative, but some positive press in our major newspaper here in Phoenix, in Arizona, in fact. And, you know, I think it brought a lot of people out of the woodwork, folks who, you know, I didn't make believers out of them. They were already believers. But perhaps this said, well, gee whiz, maybe if this guy can do this, I can go to a rally here and there. You know, I think it was helpful that way. Ultimately, it was a disappointment. I have to be honest. It was a disappointment. We didn't get the attention. And I think it, had I croaked, it wouldn't have been any different. You know,
did you have any support from any of your student body or...
Yeah, absolutely. I had a couple of students email me and say, you go, Professor. Even one of my colleagues was very supportive. He himself is convinced something's wrong with the story. And I have not heard anything really else other than that. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if there were many people in the Valley who, in fact, never heard about it, that it even happened. You know, it never got to the television news. I was on a radio station, but not the television news. All of the major media, ABC, NBC, and CBS, didn't even send a crew out. Fox and a local affiliate and Fox, they both sent crews out, but I don't think they ever aired anything. But the three big ones didn't even send a crew out. Now think about this. What does this say about the media? Here's a hunger strike going on for 17 days in front of our own senator. He's a local man here. I mean, this was a very local story. You'd think it would have at least made the local news. And he's running for president furthermore. It went on for 17 days, and they ignored it completely. What does that say?
And again, it's not like this official story of 9/11 is squeaky clean by any means. To the contrary, it's far from it. I mean, there's not any single aspect of it that isn't filled with holes and contradictions and lies and cover-ups. And
sure.
Could
have been plenty of opportunity for a reporter to report on the hunger strike without giving me approval and saying he agrees with it. You know, I mean, I understand they're not going to take sides, but a reporter could have come down and said, okay, this is a local college professor here, blah, 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 because the Maricopa County Community College system is quite large. So anybody, even, you know, as a student, it would perk up. It's a story, in other words. Pro or con, it's a story. And, you know, here he is hunger striking out front of McCain's office for these reasons, you know. And like you say, there are other questions. You could cite the commission by Paul Sheehan, right, that New York Times reporter. You could cite the Keene Hamilton themselves.
It doesn't even matter if you're a complete crackpot. It's their duty to cover something. This is a big story, you know.
Nicely.
And so to not cover it at all, once again, you know, I'm almost grateful to them for their little boycotts, because it shows that they are hiding something.
I think that was one of the biggest lessons that, I mean, I believe we were already all aware of this and understood this, but it highlighted it, and it was yet more evidence to demonstrate that there is a conspiracy within the media. It's concerted, it's comprehensive, and they're doing their job very well by omission, is not talking about it. And even something like what we did here locally, they just cannot do it. They just cannot.
Yeah, there you go, folks. Your media is lying to you. They've been engaging in activities like this for a long time, and we'd better wake up to it and fast. They have no conscience. Their loyalties are with their corporate check signers, and that's it.
And even if there's a reporter in the newsroom that would love him or herself to go out and, I'd like to go talk to this guy or report something on Building 7, I don't believe he or she would have approval. That the news director, program director for the station would say, I'm sorry, you just do not have the freedom to do that. Now, I don't have an in here, but that's my guess. And what are you going to do? You got a wife and kids at home, or how's it, you know, you're a breadwinner of the family, and you're going to lose your job? You know?
Right.
Well, what the hell? It's just a terrible situation that we're in, but it makes me fearful, and that's why I think it really is up to the citizen activists, to step up and say, look, we're mad as hell, we're not going to take it anymore, because if they can successfully do this with September the 11th, would this embolden them?
We're all in trouble.
Yeah.
If they can torture people carte blanche without any trial, a lawyer, or representation behind closed doors in Guantanamo Bay, they can do it in San Francisco Bay. Mm-hmm. We're all, it's open season on all of us.
It's a dangerous precedent that the media is so stifled. It's just a dangerous
precedent. Yeah, you know, in a sense, they actually aggravate me, annoy me, enrage me, even more than the politicians who are committing crimes like 9/11, because their cover-up activities are what facilitate that. This is how they're getting away with it. If they were doing the job and exposing this, you know, we wouldn't be in half the mess we're in.
And that gives the arguments of those in the public who say, well, how can the government hold on to a conspiracy like this? Wouldn't somebody leak, you know? And I always remind them, you know, back in the day of Watergate, you had your Deep Throat who was leaking information to Woodward and Bernstein, and they were reporting. I said, well, you know, today there are the Deep Throats. There are the whistleblowers, the Sybil Edmonds, the Michael Springmans, the various
folks on the inside. Sure. They just classify their testimonies.
Oh, we've got no press. We've got no Woodward. We've got no Bernstein today. They're gone.
Yeah.
They're just gone.
Most people don't realize Sybil Edmonds, I think she gave the longest of any testimony before the 9/11 Commission. What was it, 3-4 hours, and the whole thing is classified.
Unbelievable.
She also has a gag order that John Ashcroft had put on her, too. It's still in effect.
John Ashcroft is in up to his eyeballs in this whole thing.
Oh, just absolutely.
In up to his eyeballs. Unbelievable.
Wretch.
Yeah.
You know, we have some questions that are coming in here in text. Here's one from Mike in California. He says, I understand that State Senator Karen Johnson of Arizona is supporting another 9/11 investigation and is, in fact, part of a 9/11 event coming up in September on the 11th, along with Jesse Ventura. And he wants to know, will you be there, and could you talk about it if you are?
Yes, I will be there. As a matter of fact, we met the 9/11 Truth Phoenix leadership last night, and we were kind of putting some of the finishing touches on the details of the venue and whatnot. But yes, Karen Johnson will be in attendance, as long as myself, speaking with, Jesse Ventura is the main event. He's doing a book promotion.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah, very good. And he devotes 7 or 8 pages to 9/11, very, very hard-hitting 9/11 truth questions in his book. So that's been a big area of interest for us, naturally.
Fantastic.
So yes, if I'm given an opportunity, I hope to be able to say something. But yes, that will be, don't know the venue yet, but that will be September the 11th.
And he's not hiding this. I mean, he's been on the circuit. You know, I've seen him in numerous interviews, mainstream, you know, and he's coming right out and talking about it. And, I you know, Larry King even let him go off on it. He wasn't questioning or making fun of him, you know.
Hey, Jesse's a credible guy. There's nothing flaky about Jesse. I mean, he's got a military background. He's a Navy SEAL. He's a very level-headed guy, commands a lot of respect. The establishment hates him, which we understand why. For the longest time, McCain was in the same position. If you go to the website and look at the Daily Chronicle of the hunger strike at hungryfortruth.com, on day 6, I make up an appeal. I say, I'm appealing to McCain. Come on, McCain, come up and confront this information. I believe you can do it. The whole theme of my hunger strike was, McCain, I think you've been lied to. You know, you wrote the foreword to this dastardly cover-up by Popular Mechanics, but I think you've been fooled with the rest of us. Come up and talk to us about this. So that was my angle the whole time. And on day 6, I said, why don't you pick Jesse Ventura for your vice president? I said, McCain-Ventura ticket? I said, if the two of you together came clean on 9/11 and blew the lid off this thing, I said, I think the American people would put you into power, and don't let these corporate forces put you into power, because it's just, you know,
you might miss out on turkey dinner at the Bushes this Thanksgiving, but...
Without a doubt, let's hope. But anyway, yeah, Jesse's a good guy, and he's been very vocal, as you say. And
we're
anxious to have him here on the 11th.
Got to give him credit, and I hope he does run for the Senate like he was talking. Tell you what, we got another question here. John from the Canadian Rockies, he asks, Professor, do you believe that justice will be served in our lifetime. And why has this matter not been handled by the International Criminal Court with the power of subpoena?
Yeah, great question, because it was an international crime. I mean, but remember, the United States is not a signatory to the International Criminal Court, so they don't have to cooperate really in any fashion. My God, the leadership here chose not to cooperate with anybody. I mean, look at this. Imagine, as a firefighter, wouldn't you feel betrayed that the steel was not properly and thoroughly examined to find out the causes of its weakness, you know, when 300-odd firemen died? But no, they just shipped all that stuff hastily and got rid of it. So they wouldn't. United States officials would not cooperate with a criminal court, even though it was an international crime, and that, you know, even others other than American citizens were murdered. As for our lifetime, well, I want to believe so. I sure hope so. I'd like to be vindicated, you know, while I'm still alive. But is it possible that they could potentially get away with it? And it could be 100 years before anything. I mean, potentially. I think the Internet ought to undermine that, their ability to stifle it for too long, though, you would think. I mean, young
people... Well, you know, to throw my two cents in as far as the International Criminal Court goes, I think they named it well, International Criminal Court. A court run by criminals. I mean, you know, the same international financiers that... are financing people like the Bush administration, you know. They're the ones who created these international systems like the UN, the International Criminal Court, the IMF, the World Bank. You know, a lot of people look at these entities as the cavalry that will march in and save the day, and, you know. But it's the same crime bosses behind the scenes creating all of these things. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the UN. I don't see it as... our hope for peace. I see the UN as a war-waging enterprise, just like the U.S. has been. In fact, since the UN's inception, the U.S. has operated under the auspice of the UN with a lot of its military operations around the world, supposedly fought under the aegis of, you know, containing communism. But it was all about imperialism. And everywhere we went, we set up bases. The UN came in and set up their peacekeeping troops. So, you know, they're really after, all of them are after the same thing. They come at it from different angles, of course. But I see them all as being interested in global domination.
You have to wonder, now this is just a pure speculation on my part, but would there be a collusion between the military-industrial elites of this country and, let's say, of Russia and or China? And
I believe so. In fact,
engineer war.
Sure. I think what's going on right now is another attempt to set off a global conflict. You know, I think this is what was going on with the Israeli invasion into Lebanon, you know, Beirut 2 years ago. They were hoping that that was going to expand, you know, get Syria involved, and then Iran, and then Russia would jump in, and, you know, a big free-for-all. And I think that that's what's going on here. It turns out that, you know, the U.S. and Israel have been involved in funding and supplying this current war over there. Of course, Israel has vested interest. You know, they want the control of the pipeline coming through there, and Georgia just happens to border Iran by rare coincidence.
Yeah, right. And we've got Iran surrounded thoroughly now with the bases people are building in Iraq. And
sure. They're just rubbing their hands together, you know. They're just drooling over that. They can't wait to leave on it.
That's what I mean. Are they engineering some type of expanded war now in the Middle East, and Iran will really just be a place to raise, you know, R-A-Z-E, on their way to really securing some type of cooperation between, or cooperation in that it's kind of, well, look, Russia is interested in this region, China's interested in this region, and so are we. I think we're the three principal powers. So to kind of hammer out some type of agreement, or if you go back and read an article in a foreign policy, or is foreign affairs, one of the two, back in April 6, in which it was argued that we ought to make something of a first strike, if you will, against the thermonuclear capabilities of Russia and China, while they're still relatively weak compared to us. I mean, this is Webster Tarpley refers to this type of research, and he alluded to this as being something somewhat ominous. That, you know, if this is the strategic thinking of our leaders and our planners, that they're willing to tempt or test these other major powers over this region. Well, it could get out of their control, and they don't know where it would end. It ultimately could spark a World War III if you want to get real catastrophic about it.
And, you know, some people would say, well, that's crazy. Why would they want to do that? Hey, look, these are the same people, the same family names, you know, passing on the torch from generation to generation, father to son to grandson.
Sure.
These are the same people that brought us World War I and World War II. They instigated it. They profiteered off of it. And the pattern that emerges is striking when you step back and look at the panoramic view. After World War I, these same banking interests helped to set up, through Woodrow Wilson, the little puppet, you know, the Versailles Treaty, and out of that came, amongst other things, the League of Nations. And, of course, it failed. The United States wouldn't join. So then they stage another war. You know, they start wreaking even more profits, but the real agenda was not just money-making. They wanted control. And so in the wake of that war, they set up the United Nations. And this time they put it on our front doorstep so we wouldn't be so suspicious. It worked. The U.S. did join. But the UN hasn't been what they were hoping it would be. You know, it hasn't worked out quite so well because people see it as more of a troublemaker than a solution to our problem. So now here they are trying to stage yet another war, and it's obvious what they're going to do in the wake of it if they get it. They're going to say, "Hey, look, whether you like it or not, this time we're going to have world government. We're going to impose it on you because we can't afford to have another. You know, this is the third world war now in the past 100 years,
right?
And yet they staged the whole thing."
And this is where, to some degree, and again, this is sheer speculation on my part, but I see 9/11 as something of a phase one in which this mobilized the country, got us entrenched over in the Middle East, and now we've pretty much got ourselves well cemented and stretched to the max. Well, I wonder if there wouldn't be, since we've been properly propagandized about what 9/11 is all about, if there wouldn't be another false flag here in order to really mobilize us. You'd have 2 million young, patriotic young men signing up to go fight over there if weapons of mass destruction.
Suddenly there'd be support again behind this unelected scoundrel in Washington, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, you know, it's not even speculation. I mean, you can prove that on numerous points. For example, Tommy Franks, you know, on two occasions. One was in December of 2003. He was quoted in Cigar Aficionado magazine. And then later in August 2004, he was on Fox with Hannity. I saw this interview myself. And he said essentially the same thing that he did in his interview with Cigar Aficionado. He said, it's not a question of if but when we're going to get hit again with another attack. It's going to be major. And when it happens, it's going to mean setting up some form of military government here. It'll mean the end of the Constitution. I mean, you could just picture him rubbing his hands together as he said that.
Sure.
This is the plan.
Sure. Yeah, even Katie Couric asked, it was Mueller of the FBI, what keeps you up at night? He says, weapons of mass destruction in the hands of terror.
Yeah, and who has more of those than this government?
They're preparing us for it. It says,
Michael
Sawyer. Big-time spin doctor out of the CIA says in a 2007 PBS video on jihad and Islamic jihad, he says, Bin Laden has got a fatwa from a cleric. Then this is a setting the stage, right? To use nuclear weapons in the United States to kill as many as 10 million people. It's as though he's got a religious decree now. Okay, you can go up to 10 million Americans, but that's it. It's like, come on, you guys. What are you trying to do here?
Is that the Bin Laden with the short, stubby nose or the long, slender
one? Yeah, there you go.
The right-handed or left-handed Bin Laden?
The one hooked up to the dialogue.
The one who wears the gold ring or the one who doesn't wear it?
Oh,
you got to laugh. It's just a big joke. It's a scam. It's unbelievable.
Quick to deal with it, and that's the problem, and that's what where something like the hunger strike comes out and the alternative press like you're involved in comes into play to try to help provide alternative understandings to the pablum we're spoon-fed.
Oh, it's the Twilight Zone. I mean, look at the PNAC document. This is stuff that's public record, albeit the Project of the New American Century. They've since taken their website down, but you can still look this information up. It's all over the web. The London Guardian did a big story on this, the BBC. Their September 2000 report, and for those that don't know, this is a neocon think tank created in 1997 by Rumsfeld, Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl Feith, Abrams, Jeb Bush, William Kristol. Any of these names sound familiar? In their September 2000 report, Rebuilding America's Defenses, amongst other bizarre statements such as, you know, we need a new Pearl Harbor type event so we can go into Iraq and get its oil, they actually said that we need to transfer the use of chemical and biological weapons, i.e. weapons of mass destruction, from the realm of terrorism to a more politically useful tool, and they wanted to focus primarily on developing a biological weapon that could target certain genotypes. Now, what do you think that means? That's ethnic cleansing.
Yes, they're cleansing for sure.
This is their own words.
Wow.
This isn't somebody's opinion. You know, this is what they were proposing. And, of course, since 9/11, this government has invested $10 billion a year on research and development of such weapons. And they claim to want to be disarming others of them that don't even have them in the first place, of course. Again,
yeah.
Somebody pinch me, you know. This is Twilight
Zone. Exactly.
I can't believe
it.
Please, tell me it's a bad dream. I had too many jalapenos before bed or something.
Yeah, wake me up from this nightmare. Where are they taking us? Where are they taking us? And again, speculation. These glass and steel cities that they're building on top of the oil fields in Dubai and, you know, the Middle East there. What do you make of those? What's the purpose of these luxury resorts, you know, the Palm Island, the World Island, these things they're building, and these skyscrapers? It's certainly not for an indigenous population, right? I mean, the Arabs of the peninsula don't, I mean, they're just a fraction of the numbers of, because of the expats that are working there. But I've often wondered, what is the need? Are there that many wealthy people that this would be needed for simply vacation retreats? I know Europeans like to go over to the Gulf and whatnot, but it seems like they're building, talk about an economic boom or a mortgage boom, and building a bubble. And I wonder if it isn't something more sinister than that.
Quite a bit of money's going over there.
Yeah. You know?
And there is, of course, that cozy little dotty relationship with the Bush family, the royal family members.
Well,
you know?
Naturally, this would be
and of course the Bin Laden family members.
Naturally, they're all together.
Which they flew out on the afternoon of 9/11 when nobody else could fly.
Mm-hmm. Bandir Bush was Prince Bandir was often cited. Remember, this comes from Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, right? We often called him Bandir Bush. He was so close with the Bush family.
Yeah.
Yeah,
what a cozy little arrangement. Yeah. I tell you what, we got to cut for a commercial, short commercial break, but we got some more questions coming in, so when we get back, we'll take some of those and discuss some more of the fraudulent nature of these fake 9/11 type attacks. Of course, 9/11 isn't the only one. It's the biggest of its kind, but they've pulled a lot of other fiascos like this. Maybe we can talk some more about things like that. So stick with us, folks. We'll be right back with our guest, Blair Gladsby.
More than 1 million children are forced into prostitution every year because of sex tourism. Morocco has become a favorite destination. The economic difficulties contribute to the alarming growth of this industry. SOS Morocco's mission is to let the world know that it's against the law, a human and moral crime, to travel to Morocco with the intent to engage in sexual activity with a child. Please visit SOSMorocco.org for more information and to support our endeavors.
Got questions? The library has got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
This is Gore Vidal. Can you name the one country on earth where the government can steal elections, strip away basic rights, spy on civilians, launch wars based on lies, and where the people do not take over the nation's capital in protest? If you said the United States, you'd be right. So let's remedy that by calling our Congress members and asking them to support the impeachment of George Bush and Dick Cheney. This message is sponsored by AfterDowningStreet.com.
Join us on the People Speak radio show every Tuesday and Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern for an hour of live interview and audience interaction with guests from the realms of entertainment, education, activism, spirituality, politics, and literature. Get involved and make a difference for the better. That's the People Speak every Tuesday and Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on BBS Radio Network.
Okay, folks, welcome back. Again, this is your host, Charles Giuliani, filling in today on the People Speak radio show. website is thepeoplespeakradio.net. And again, our guest today is Blair Gladsby. He's a professor of religious studies in Arizona, local community college, and he's the one who went on a hunger strike to try to bring to the attention of Mr. McCain some of the issues, the problems with the official 9/11 story. And he actually went on a 17-day-long vigil with no food, just drinking water. And so, you know, highly commendable. It just shows, you know, what one person really can accomplish. You don't need an army. Sometimes one person can be more effective, in fact, than an army when it comes to issues like this. In fact, the greatest changes in history have come about through just one person, if you look back, you know. So we need to get away from this idea that I'm just one person, what difference can I make? No, that person can make the biggest difference. But of course, you know, it takes a lot of courage. You know, you're standing out on the limb, putting yourself in the spotlight, perhaps in the fire, in front of the firing squad, literally or figuratively. But you know, it's something that we all benefit from. You know, when you're doing this, you're doing it for yourself. You're doing it for your family, your country. You're just doing it because it's right. And it's so sad that in this country today, Blair, there seems to be just a major shortage of people like that anymore. People that have just an incredible apathy. I like the joke, the father asks his son, can you give me the definition of ignorance and apathy? And the son responds by saying, Dad, I neither know nor care. And that describes pretty much the attitude today of the American public. They don't know and they don't seem to care. I mean, you can come out and tell them. If they don't call you crazy, they'll just walk away and say, oh, I don't care. What can I do about it? We can't change anything. So, no, but, you know, that's what facilitates these kind of criminal activities in the government. You know, when they see that people aren't responding, they just...
They do need our cooperation. I mean, to pull off their deeds, they need it. Now, we know they've got the media. We know they've got the kind of the top-down structure. But at the bottom level, us, I mean, they need us for the system to work. We drive the trucks, right? We go to work every day. So we do have enormous power, and obviously there is more power in numbers. But the idea that you somehow don't matter or you can't make a difference, like you've just been elaborating on, Charles, is a very fallacious one. You can make a difference. Yes, sometimes you do get ridiculed, and it's hard on your ego to have people mock you and make fun of you. And that happened during the hunger strike, to be sure. So you have to be willing to take those hits, you know, and to not be talked about in a flattering way. But you figure, look, is it worth it or not? You know, it's just something, do I believe in this strongly or not? And
the truth is, they're more afraid of us than we are of them.
Right.
And so what they are trying to do, what they're hoping to do through their control of the media is to keep us on the defensive, to keep us more in fear. But the minute we stop believing their lies and putting them under the microscope, they run in terror because we have them way outnumbered. And not to mention, their whole system would collapse if they weren't able to exploit us through you know, manipulating us through lies.
Right.
But the reality is, the way it's set up today, we're actually funding our enslavers. We're supporting with our hard-earned dollars their agenda. You know, we're feeding their power-hungry, their power-mad system.
And you see how we can force their hand? Notice what gas prices have been doing. And the price. Look, Americans have cut back. Consumption's dropped. So when we respond, when we act, it forces their hand. They pushed us. They pushed. I think this was just a clear case of speculative investing and greed with the recent run.
Oh, absolutely. No question about it.
So they pushed us. How far can we push them? How far? Okay, look, boy, we take it up to about $4 a gallon, and people start cutting back, right? And that's exactly what we did. So what do? They start. It's all a psychological game in a way. So they start pulling it back now. They'll bring it back to a level where they'll feel, where they deem that we have said, okay, I can live with this. And they'll just gouge us that much.
I mean, it's not rocket science here. We're dealing with an administration that is just packed with oil tycoons.
Completely, yeah.
They get into power, they knock out one of the biggest competitors in the oil price-setting market, and now the price jacks. I mean, come on.
Sure.
This is common sense.
good grief, you've got to be all but blind to not be. And that's the sad part, Charles. That's the part where the apathy comes in, and I hate being critical of my fellow citizens because I believe they are victimized by the cover-up and the conspiracy.
Right.
But yet at the
how dumb can you be?
Yes, exactly. You want to take a block and conk them on the head, just you know, in the Gilligan's Island way, not to be hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Go bonk. Would you wake up? You know?
Right.
And say, come on, they're right. They've got their hands in. I always use this as an example. I go to the firehouse whenever we have an event coming, Richard Gage or Griffin coming to town. And to have one of the firemen come out, and I'm holding a picture up to him and say, I know you understand that buildings do not do this. In the fire, you know, I've got a picture of one of the towers of 9/11. And to hear him say, look, none of us in here are interested in what you're trying to talk about, you know, your message, because I had been there before. And that really pained me, that here's a fireman defending the very ones who murdered his comrades. You know, it's like, wow, we've been so dumbed down. We've been made to think in a certain track. We've, through the media and advertising and a consumption society, we've been made to respond in a certain way. And here's a guy whose own, he's the one that's going to be called to run in there if something, God help us, happens again. You know, and yet he wouldn't even go in and let one of the other firemen come out and talk to me. I said, well, look, if you're not interested in what I have to say, fine, but please go have one of the other firemen. Maybe somebody else in here, the fireman, might be sympathetic to what I'm saying, and I don't think you should speak for all of them. He wouldn't even do that. He said, no, just take your stuff and leave. And
wow.
In my heart, I had, like, two feelings. One of, you know, this guy's a big, big moron, you know, justifying the very people who murdered him. And then the other side was, I felt brokenhearted for the guy, that, again, he's responding out of conditioning. And here
right.
he is, a fireman. Wow.
Well, there were some in New York. There was Cascioli, who appeared before the 9/11 Commission, and he was trying to tell them about these strange occurrences, bombs going off, and they wouldn't listen. He kept pursuing it. They kept cutting him off. Finally, he's so disgusted, he got up and he walked out. He just didn't finish the interview because, obviously, they didn't want to hear what he had to say. It was just, you know, an obvious cover-up. Willie Rodriguez, of course, the same thing.
Same thing, yeah.
Yeah. And then there was, you know, the fire chief there. He wanted to give testimony, and they said, no. They said, this is our commission. We decide who we interview. Can you imagine?
Yeah,
he
looked
at the fireman's union.
Control of all that.
Right. Right.
You're absolutely right. No, it was a fiasco. It's been, and I think the words, the final report on the collapse will come to haunt them. It's just a joke. I mean, like, it's a tragic joke, but yes, it's just a fiasco. How do we get the public to think otherwise? To say, come on now, we've got to examine this. This is not just a matter of the historical record. We're continue to fight wars on the basis of this myth.
Right.
Here in
sure.
Here in Phoenix, we had the murder of a Sikh man for nothing more than wearing a turban, and some fella, his name is Frank Roque, and I happened to do a death row, he's on death row, and I did an interview with him a couple of years ago over the telephone, and I wanted to pick his brain. What were you thinking, dude? Because this is one of the tragic consequences of, kind of the side consequences of the 9/11 myth. The myth being that it was just Al-Qaeda and angry Arab terrorists and Muslims who hate us because we're free. You know, there's the big lie of all
this. What a laugh, yeah.
It's preposterous. But our fellow citizens
sure.
are believing this junk, you know. They hate us because we're free. And so I wanted to pick his brain. And he said, yeah, they're just all angry Muslims. Well, there again, think of it from a 9/11 inside truth point of view. Here a Sikh man is murdered because of this virulent lie, that our government is perpetuating and our media is perpetuating about jihad and all this nonsense. Stupid, implicating religion is just preposterous here.
Of course, yeah. It's just, again, it's just propaganda, you know.
Thoroughly.
Tell you what, we got some more questions coming in here. We got Mark in Florida. He asks, does Professor Gadsby have a website? Very good question. I was going to be asking you that myself.
Okay.
And then also, is he rallying others, either students or faculty, at his college to join the 9/11 Truth Movement?
I sure do. I don't speak in class. I have to be careful now because this is such a politically charged topic.
Yeah.
I cannot use any resources.
Put your job in jeopardy, sure.
All right. But however, I teach about world religions, and especially in the Islam class, I mean, I feel it's very much the purview of and the topic of the course to address the lies that surround. So while I don't go into the inside job stuff, I do deconstruct the myths of what the government tells us and I have not, like, showed Building 7 in my classes. I feel that might be crossing a line. But even then, it would be, I'm intrigued by the idea. I'd love to do that.
Have one of your students come up and show it.
Yeah, totally. When they bring it up, I can let them have at it. But yes, I do feel it's as a religious studies educator to deconstruct the lies that the government tells us. And I build upon the Waco incident, because I've been teaching about that for years in my class, where the government really, when you dig down into it, they murdered those people in there. They were not suicidal. That building came down in fire as a result of the byproduct of some of the gas they were sending in to try to flush the people out.
And the psychological warfare, they were playing music, you know, these boots are made to walk in and play with fire, you're going to get burned, and
Just like 9/11, they scrub the site immediately, destroy all the evidence, clean it up.
Front door disappeared,
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that there was a fire truck right outside the gate, and they were being held at bay by FBI agents? They wouldn't let them in.
Right.
They wanted to get in there. They couldn't believe that they weren't being allowed to get in.
I recommend your listeners watch Waco Rules of Engagement. It's a documentary, kind of much in the spirit of our 9/11 documentaries. And there's what they have called FLIR, forward-looking infrared camera. And there was a drone that was flying over the compound during while the siege was underway. And there's footage from this FLIR that captures heat sources, not reflections of light, but heat sources. And there are flashes from where the tanks were situated, the military tanks that started to pummel the building when the people, there were women and children in there, for crying out loud. And they were being sniperized. It appears as though the FBI and the military snipered the people who were in that compound and did not let them escape. Holy
they were going up to the window and hanging moons with young kids in the building. And they were picking their dogs up out of the kennel and blowing their heads off right in front of the window, you know, just psychologically messing with them.
Unbelievable.
Day and night, they were blaring loud music. They were flashing spotlights in the window so they couldn't sleep. And again, there were children in there.
There were children and old people in there. There were over 70, close to 80 people. 70 people died in the end, but yes, there was children.
And what had they done? I mean, including Koresh. But at least, you know, Koresh was the person they claimed they had the beef with. Okay. So why didn't they arrest him when he went for his morning jog, when he went for his coffee at the shop?
Even that can all be deconstructed, Charles. The ATF does not have, remember, the two charges against Koresh was child molestation and amassing weapons. Well,
right, and there never was any evidence of either.
What jurisdiction does ATF have over child molestation?
Yeah, precisely.
Nothing.
Sure.
So they had no grounds to be there on that charge. That was a local sheriff deal. And the sheriff says that, look, every time I went to investigate that, what happens is in Texas, when you're as young as 13 years old, if you have your parents' consent, you can be married off if you're a young girl.
Yeah.
Now, okay, so Koresh was having sex with teenage girls as young as 14 years old, but their parents were consenting, so whether they liked it or not, it was ugly. It was nothing legally that they could do against them.
Right.
And then in the other one, of the amassing weapons, the ATF went to his door. He invited them in to look at his inventory. He had a permit to deal guns, you know, and they would not come in and check his inventory. They wanted everybody out, and he said, screw you. This is America. We're not coming out. We live here. You're welcome to come in and check my inventory. And it was just loggerheads from there. It was just a fiasco.
Yep, it was just a power display, that's all. Very disgusting one at that. Anyway, let's see. We've got another question here. Sally in Ohio, she asks, in your position... Oh, by the way, your website, did you want to...
Right. Hungry for Truth, with the number 4 stuck in there, hungryfortruth.com. There's a chronicle there of the hunger strike. There's some postings, and I keep it updated with information on just the 9/11.
I love that play on words there. You were on hunger strike, hungry for truth. Excellent.
Hungry for truth.
Anyway, let's see. Yeah, Sally in Ohio, she asks, in your position in academia, have you thought of enlisting the help of other, kind of like the same question, other professors of engineering or physics regarding the 9/11 movement?
Well, I'm going to work with my religious studies professors. I want to start canvassing them and saying, listen, there's something wrong with the story. We are basically sitting idly by while the government besmirches Islam and allows words like Islamofascism, which is just a nonsense from top to bottom. sure. Islamo fascism circulate in society as though they mean something. And this is
like
garbage.
Devil worshipping Christian, although a lot of them are today.
What we have in the religious studies and Islamic studies is basically an academic version of what would Jesus do, but related to Islam, when they meddle around with questions like jihad and the interpretation of jihad and is it okay to kill, you know, on Ramadan or, you know,
This next question is actually related to that. This is from Carolyn, Oklahoma, and she asks, as a professor of religious studies, could you respond to those who say that Islam is a terrorist religion and that the Middle East needs to be reformed?
Yes, it's absolute hogwash. Of course there are reform movements within the Middle East that go back long before, you know, our CIA. Think of the Muslim Brotherhood, for example. It rises out of Egypt in the 1920s. CIA isn't developed until 47. So, you know, there's no connection here. But a little understanding of British and American insurgency, counterinsurgency methods, means that you infiltrate what are already indigenous movements, use them or manipulate them or infiltrate them, conduct false flags in their name, besmirch them, try to demote them politically. No, Islam has, and the world, the countries, the nation states today that are predominantly Muslim, they have reform movements within them. They have resistance movements within them. We have very brutal governments over there. If you remember, why was it that bin Laden said he was willing to attack the United States? Because there are young men with criminal intentions towards the United States. That's the fantasy. That's not an inaccuracy. They do.
Sure.
They would try to do harm to the United States for the various, not because we're free, but because we've meddled in their countries, or we've, the three primary or principal reasons bin Laden said why he was willing to send jihadi terrorists to come and attack us would be because we had supported Israel uncritically over and above the Palestinians and their crushing situation, that we had allowed troops to stay in the Arabian Gulf, which are the holy sites of Islam, ever since Gulf War I back in 1990-91, and then that we had propped up terrible governments. We have a pattern of doing this now where we install...
Oh, yeah, the Contras and...
The Shah of Iran is a good example.
Shah, yeah,
Saddam
sure.
Hussein, for crying out loud.
Yeah, right.
Of course
sure.
We knew he had weapons of mass destruction. We still had the receipts from when we'd sold them to him back in the 80s.
The simple point is, our politicians are in our employ. We hire them to manage things first and foremost here at home. The only time we're to stick our nose in foreign countries is when they've stuck their nose in us first, you know?
Right.
Saddam hasn't done anything to us. He didn't propose to do anything to us. Neither did Afghanistan, for that matter. You know, there's no basis for that war either. Where's the evidence? It's never been presented that the Taliban and Osama were connected with 9/11. I'm not defending them as, my heroes, but where's the evidence?
The Taliban are a terrible bunch of characters as far as their
treatment. Right, but, I mean, where's the evidence that they were involved in 9/11? There isn't.
Nothing.
So, I mean, it's not our business to go over there and blow up every person we don't like. We supposedly don't like North Korea's leader, but are we going in there? You know? Well, of course not, because there's no oil. We don't like China's leader, so they claim anyway. I think they get along with them quite fine, actually. But, you know, China's very antagonistic toward human rights. Are we threatening them? Are we doing anything to stop that? Of course not. You see, we only go after those who supposedly abuse human rights that have something we want.
Right. Remember Rwanda and Burundi, when those poor people were suffering and 800,000 of them were murdered by just machetes for people?
Oh, the Tutsis. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You couldn't lift a helicopter off the ground to go help them. So, because they, again, no resources, vital resources.
They were begging for help, and we were just twiddling our thumbs over here.
Mm-hmm. Arguing over just
hypocrisy.
Genocide.
Yeah. Hypocrisy is just so disgusting.
Getting back to something that was important was the Gandhi's notion of satyagraha and peaceful resistance. I'm very discouraged at the moment at the efficacy of this today. I mean, it rallied people of goodwill, but I'm concerned that our leadership, and perhaps as a result of the dumbing down and the kind of the technological age and the soundbite age we live in, that the principles of something like peacefulness and resistance and thoughtfulness and love and kindness, kind of Gandhi weaved into his notions of peaceful resistance, almost have no effect anymore. And that's very sad. That's very sad.
It is. We need more people like Gandhi in the world. He was an absolute saint, if you ask me. And, of course, they killed him. as they always
do. Yeah, no kidding.
Before we run out any more time, I have another question here. Fran in British Columbia, a very good question. She asks, have you noticed, as she has, that although there are many references and media presence of the victims' families and the victims of the WTC, other than claims by Lisa Beamer, the wife of Todd Beamer, have you heard or seen any information about other passengers on the planes? Evidently, she's wondering, you know, have you seen any evidence to corroborate any of these other stories, or, you know, do you think it's just fabricated about, you know, the victims and the phone calls and...
Oh, I have no comment on that. I really don't know what to say about that.
Well, you know, I actually have a comment on that. I can say with certainty that if you go through all of the phone calls, I don't deny there were victims on the planes, you know, that people did die. But the phone calls are all frauds.
Sure.
There's no question. I mean, you've got Mark Bingham. Hi, Mom. This is Mark Bingham calling.
Right, right.
Why would you even mention your first name, never mind your last, you know? And then all he does is ask, you believe me, right, Mom? And, of course, she responds, of course I believe you. Who are these people? And then what she gets is, you know, the phone cuts out because he can't answer her because he's a computer facsimile.
And there are anomalies of several, the last 3 minutes of Flight 93 missing on the tape.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason. My belief on that is that I believe the planes were simply rigged ahead of time. And there might not have even needed to be any pilots in the pilot seat. Once the thugs took over the plane,
remote control,
and killed the pilots, that's why the questions about whether there were 19 or could have been 50.
Well, there weren't any hijackers. Where's the evidence of that? Eight have been found to be alive. There's no pictures of them from Logan, from Newark. You know, their names went on the original passenger manifest.
Right.
I mean, the whole thing is just a fraud.
Sure, sure.
There's no evidence at all to back any of this. You know, the famous Todd Beamer phone call. Let's roll.
Right.
Well, most people don't realize this, but he talked to a complete stranger, Lisa Jefferson of Verizon. She came out 2 years ago, you know, she wrote a book, and she says, you know, I've been rethinking this whole thing. I don't think I talked to Todd Beamer. I don't know his voice from a hole in the wall. And, you know, his own wife, I talked with her, and she said her husband was not religious at all. He never recited the Lord's Prayer before or the 23rd Psalm. She didn't even think he knew those things, and yet he supposedly was reciting them with her. You know, this whole thing was fabricated.
Wow.
The wife never heard this phone call. They recorded it. But they only sent her a printed transcript.
Wow.
So she's never been able to confirm it was his voice, because it wasn't his voice. You go through all these phone calls, you know, I wish I had more time, we could break them down,
sure,
but they're
sure.
All fake. There's no...
Unbelievable. I think if we ever get the privilege of knowing the full extent of what went on, I think we'll be shocked at just what the hell happened.
Oh, yeah, it's just mind-boggling.
It'll blow many of us 9/11 truthers' minds out. You know, I think many of us will be, what the heck? I didn't think it was even that extensive.
Even that bad, sure, sure. I mean, I don't doubt there were people on the planes, but they were jamming their phone signals. They would not allow real phone calls to get out because people would hear that what's really happening on those planes isn't what we were told was happening, you know?
Sure. Yeah, I think they were just rigged. They were the military versions of the 757 and the 767, and I think they were just homing beacons or ground control, you know, remote, and just brought in. And who knows how many people may have been on them. If it was just a few of the passengers, they were light loads, you know, just a few of the passengers got on. Pilots from the cockpit, it appears like a regular 757.
Right.
And, yeah, who knows, man. Yeah, again, who knows? This is just... But too many things just don't add up, if you say.
No, they certainly don't. And, you know, I wish we had more time. We're really running short here. But I want to thank you for coming on. This has been a very enlightening interview. I want to encourage you to keep going the way you're going. This is great. Once again, folks, Blair Gadsby, and his website is hungerfortruth.com, correct?
Hungry for Truth.
I'm sorry, you're right.
Hungryfortruth.com. And I've just completed a manuscript for the kind of, I kept a daily chronicle of the hunger strike, and there's a little bit of additional research of my own in there, and I'll put some ordering information on that on the website if people are interested in reading a little bit more about what took place this summer out front of McCain's office.
Excellent. Okay, thanks again, Blair, for joining us, and keep up the good work. We're rooting for you.
Thank you, Charles.
Good luck on 9/11 with the the rally there. Hope all goes well.
Yes, the Jesse Ventura event. We're looking very forward to that very much. And, of course, Karen Johnson. So we invite people, whoever would like to come on out, and should be a good-sized 9/11 truth rally there on September 11th.
Excellent. Okay, thanks again, and Godspeed to you, as they say.
Same
okay,
to you
folks, you bet. Next Tuesday, don't miss, we're going to have Margaret Cho, a comedian, and then next Wednesday night, we're going to have Will Thomas, a Canadian author and a journalist, who will be discussing more about 9/11. So you don't want to miss those shows. Again, that's next Tuesday and Wednesday night, 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern, here on the People Speak Radio. That's the PeopleSpeakRadio.net here on BBS Radio. So we'll see you then. Take care, and God bless.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the sea, by the relief of death, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering, if this land was made for you and me. This land is yours. This land is my land, from California to the New York Island, the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream water. Yeah, this land is made for you and me.